I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. It's about interesting family stories and the truth behind them. It's available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Javon Danelle Taylor. He was the older half-brother of Jaycion Terrell Taylor, better known to the world as The Game. Growing up in Compton in the late 80s and early 90s meant growing up in the middle of gang tension, street politics, and constant danger. Their dad had ties to the Nutty Block Crips, their mom was connected to the Hoovers, and the kids grew up surrounded by rival sets constantly clashing.
Born and raised in Compton.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, your parents, weren't they both Crips?
Yeah.
Javon eventually fell in with the Nutty Block's Crips himself, not out of glamour, but because in Compton, your neighborhood and the people around you shaped your path whether you liked it or not. At the time of his death, Javon had something rare in front of him, a record deal lined up, a possible way out of the streets he'd been raised in. In June 1995, that hope was abruptly shattered. Javon was at a gas station in Compton when an argument broke out. Different sources point to either a territorial issue or something personal, but whatever sparked it, the situation blew up fast. Shots rang out and Javon was hit multiple times in the stomach. He survived long enough to make it to the hospital, and when 13-year-old The Game walked into the room alongside their father, it looked like he might actually pull through. He was awake, talking, and seemed stable. But by the next day, everything changed. Javon's condition suddenly crashed, and he passed away, leaving Game devastated and full of guilt and anger. With no arrests and no closure, Javon's death became the wound that shaped The Game's entire life and career. Kevin Miller. He was the younger brother of Percy Master P. Miller, long before Master P became a hip-hop mogul and built No Limit Records into a powerhouse. While Percy left New Orleans to chase new opportunities in California, Kevin stayed behind in the Calio projects, caught in the daily grind of street life. By the late 80s, he had become involved with a local street crew known as the Tuesday Crew, seven young hustlers trying to survive and get money in one of the most dangerous areas of the city. Master P knew the streets were closing in on his brother and even called him the day before his death, begging him to move out west. Kevin wasn't ready to walk away just yet.
Before he left, Kevin had called and P was asking Kevin, come on out here, man. He was begging him to come out here.
On the morning of September 14th, 1990, Kevin got into a car with two people he knew, 21-year-old Melvin Radcliffe and 17-year-old Kenneth Williams. At some point during the drive, Kevin and Williams got into a heated argument. No one knows exactly what sparked it, but it escalated fast. Sitting in the back seat, Williams pulled out a gun and shot Kevin multiple times in the head and back. Panicking, the men dumped his body by the side of Interstate 10, where it went undiscovered for nearly 2 weeks.
They said that he had been driving with two other men who were in the car.
Listeners, I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore, where people tell interesting stories about their family history and then we investigate the truth behind them. Family Lore is available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Got into some sort of argument. Ultimately, he was shot several times in the back and in the head.
They dumped his body on the side of the road. Like, how do you do that some?
When troopers eventually found the remains, the investigation led back to Radcliffe and Williams. Radcliffe eventually confessed, pointing to Williams as the shooter. Both were arrested, Williams receiving the harsher sentence and Radcliffe serving fewer years for cooperating. Kevin's murder shattered the Miller family and pushed Master P to go harder than ever, turning tragedy into the fuel behind his legendary rise. Tyree Dushawn Crayon. He was Dr. Dre's younger half-brother, the son of Dre's mother, Verna, from her second marriage. Dre and Tyree grew up under the same roof, sharing a bedroom and navigating the ups and downs of a complicated family. In the summer of 1989, Dre's world was changing fast, but tragedy hit even faster. Tyree, just 21 years old, got into a violent confrontation on Crenshaw Boulevard in Compton. No one knows exactly what sparked the fight, but the altercation turned physical and deadly. During the struggle, Tyree suffered a broken neck, though it's unclear if it came from a fall or from being attacked directly. Whatever the cause, the injury proved fatal, and Tyree died from the trauma he sustained that day. When investigators tried to look into the incident, they hit a wall. No official police report, no medical examiner's file, no documentation from LAPD or the former Compton Police Department. It was as if his case never existed. Despite efforts years later to uncover details, the investigation went nowhere. No suspects were named, and Tyree's death remains unsolved to this day. For Dr. Dre, the loss left a permanent mark. He later dedicated the message from 2001 to Tyree, keeping his brother's memory alive even without justice. Derek Hollywood Harris. He was the older brother of Miami rapper Trick Daddy, and in Liberty City, his name carried real weight. Hollywood was street smart, respected, and deeply connected in Miami's hustling world. He even played a major role in helping Ted Lucas build what would become Slip and Slide Records long before the label blew up. But in 1994, when Trick Daddy was locked up, Hollywood's life came to a brutal end. One night in June or July of that year, Hollywood was at Studio 183. He was with a companion when gunmen pulled up and unleashed an unbelievable amount of gunfire. Witnesses say more than 100 rounds were fired into the car, with over 30 bullets hitting Hollywood alone.
Your brother and the guy in the car with him both get shot to death.
Right. My brother got shot over, it was like 100 and some shots.
Damn.
My brother got shot over 30 times.
One of the shooters reportedly used an AR-15, spraying the windshield until both men were dead. It was one of the most violent killings in Miami.
How We Met Your Mother is the How I Met Your Mother rewatch podcast with me, Josh Radner, and series co-creator Craig Thomas. Follow How We Met Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
The time. Despite the sheer brutality of the attack, the case went nowhere. Detectives looked into possible motives, but nothing stuck. Nobody was ever arrested or charged, and the murder remains officially unsolved. Trick Daddy was temporarily released from jail just long enough to attend Hollywood's funeral before being sent back, a moment that stayed with him forever.
Had this happened in June or July of 94.
Okay.
So I had to come. I went to the funeral. You know, you pay a couple dollars. They tell me to the funeral. When I come back, now I got to stay in the county for 2-3 days.
The tragedy also hit Trina hard. She had been in a relationship with Hollywood at the time. His death became a defining pain for everyone close to him, fueling Trick Daddy's drive as he later helped Slip and Slide become a major force in Southern hip-hop. Melvin Combs. He was the father of Sean Diddy Combs, but long before Diddy built his empire, Melvin was surviving Harlem's heroin era in the early 1970s. He moved in dangerous circles, hustling and dealing in a neighborhood controlled by major drug traffickers, mafia distributors, and legendary kingpins like Frank Lucas. Even though Diddy was only 3 when his father died, Melvin's life and the mystery surrounding his death became a defining shadow over the rapper's childhood.
My father, he was killed when I was 3 years old. I don't have like a lot of memories of my father.
By late 1971, Melvin had already caught a major charge after being arrested with heroin and $45,000 in cash. Around the same time, the heroin operation run by Willie Abraham, Melvin's connection to the Gambino crime family, was raided and multiple associates were arrested. Almost immediately, whispers began circulating that Melvin was an informant. In that world, even the rumor of snitching was enough to get someone killed, and mafia-connected crews took that kind of suspicion seriously. On January 26, 1972, Melvin was sitting in his car on Central Park West when someone walked up and shot him in the head. It was quick and undeniably a professional execution.
His father was murdered because he ratted out his team that he was working for.
Investigators believe the murder was connected to a heroin syndicate, possibly retaliation tied to the Abraham bust. Prosecutors even hinted the hit could be traced to the same ring, but no one was ever arrested and no charges were ever filed. To this day, Melvin Combs' murder remains officially unsolved. Sabrina Jackson. She was the mother of Curtis 50 Cent Jackson, giving birth to him at just 15 and raising him alone in South Jamaica, Queens. She was tough, sharp, and deeply respected in the neighborhood, one of the rare female cocaine dealers operating in the middle of the 1980s crack epidemic.
She had me when she was 15, so, you know, back then it wasn't as common as the young girls have children at 15, a little more now than it did then.
But the same world she hustled in was the one that ultimately took her life. For 50 Cent, she was everything, his protector, his provider, and the person who taught him survival long before fame or music ever crossed his mind. By the early 80s, Sabrina was working within a violent drug economy ruled by crews like the Supreme Team. Rumors on the street claimed she had gotten involved with them and may have fallen into addiction, which allegedly caused her to mishandle money or product. In 1983, when 50 Cent was only 8, Sabrina was inside her apartment when someone targeted her in a chilling, calculated way. According to 50 himself, someone slipped something into her drink, waited for her to lose consciousness, then turned on the gas in her apartment and left her there. The death was recorded as a fire-related incident, but the circumstances made it clear. Someone wanted it to look like an accident. Despite the suspicious setup and neighborhood speculation, no suspect was ever named. No one was arrested, and no charges were filed. Yaki Gaddafi. He wasn't just another member of the Outlaws, he was Tupac's godbrother, someone who grew up in and around the Shakur household. His mother, Yasmin, was Afeni Shakur's closest friend, so Yafeo and Tupac were raised almost like family. By 19, Gaddafi was already deeply tied to Pac's world, both personally and musically. And when Tupac was shot in Las Vegas in September 1996, Yafeo was right there in the car behind him. Out of everyone who saw the shooting, he was the only witness who told police he could identify the gunman. That alone made his presence dangerous in the weeks that followed. Less than 2 months later, on November 10, 1996, Yafeo was back in Orange, New Jersey, staying at an apartment building on Mechanic Street. Early that morning, he stepped out with Napoleon's cousin, Roddy Beal, to grab a jacket from their car. They had been drinking, a violation of the building's no-alcohol rule, and as they came up the third-floor stairs, Roddy pulled out a small semi-auto pistol. Witnesses later said Yafeo joked about how he was holding it. In the middle of that teasing, the gun suddenly went off. One shot. It struck Yafeo in the right temple, dropping him instantly. Roddy panicked and ran. Police found Yafeo slumped in the stairwell minutes later, already beyond saving.
He was a rapper who toured with Tupac Shakur. 19-year-old Yafeo Fula was shot in the head early Sunday morning on the third floor of the housing project where he was visiting his girlfriend.
The investigation quickly narrowed in on Roddy. The gun was recovered in a nearby trash bin and ballistics matched it to the fatal shot. He was arrested alongside another teen, though charges against the second boy were later dropped. In 2000, Roddy took a plea deal for aggravated manslaughter and received 7 years. Officially, it was ruled an accident, but Yafeo's family never believed it. OTF D-Thang. He was more than Lil Durk's older brother. He was one of his closest companions and a core part of the OTF movement. At 32, he'd watched his little brother become one of Chicago's biggest artists while still staying connected to the streets they grew up in. D-Thang was known around the South Side, familiar with the drill scene's politics, alliances, and rivalries. Even though the brothers had risen far from the hardships of Englewood, D-Thang still moved in areas where old tensions ran deep. On June 6, 2021, just after 2 a.m., D-Thang was outside Club O in Harvey, Illinois, a place already known for rough, late-night crowds. He had been partying inside, enjoying himself, but the location mattered. This was territory controlled by rivals. As he stepped out toward the parking lot, an altercation broke out. The details of what sparked it remain unclear, but the outcome wasn't. Shots rang out, multiple weapons were recovered later, and D-Thang was hit in the head. When first responders arrived, he was already gone. In the chaos, a Harvey police officer was also shot in the thigh, treated, and released.
Now at 6, the brother of local rapper Lil Durk is dead after shooting at a club in Harvey this weekend. A police officer also injured.
Police immediately opened a homicide investigation. Names of possible suspects, men tied to rival gangs, circulated on social media, but no official arrests were publicly confirmed. Detectives said retaliation was a likely motive, part of a long chain of ongoing Chicago street conflicts. For Durk, the loss was another blow after King Von's death just months earlier. Blood Money, Big Glow. Mario Hess, better known as Blood Money or Big Glow, was Chief Keef's older cousin and one of the earliest influences in Keef's circle. At 30 years old, he was the veteran presence inside the Glory Boys entertainment camp, someone who had already been grinding through Chicago's drill scene long before Keef blew up. He had several mixtapes out, a reputation in the streets, and real credibility as a mentor figure for the younger GBE members.
What is Blood Money? money, life. The definition behind what I stand for.
Just 2 weeks before his death, he hit what should have been the turning point of his life. A deal with Interscope Records and a $50,000 signing bonus that finally gave him a chance to leave the streets behind. On April 9, 2014, Hest was back in West Englewood, near 56th and Elizabeth, celebrating the birthdays of two cousins. It was a Wednesday night around 9:45 p.m., and even though the area had been quiet for a while, anybody from Chicago knows that doesn't mean you're safe. As Hess stood outside, multiple gunmen ambushed him. More than two dozen shots rang out. So many shell casings were scattered that police had to mark them with index cards. Hess was hit as many as 10 times. A second man, another cousin in his 30s, was also shot in the stomach but survived after surgery. Hess was rushed to Strozier Hospital, where he was pronounced dead. Police never confirmed whether Hess was specifically targeted, and the case remains unsolved. No arrests were officially announced, and investigators couldn't pin down a motive. Jobina Brown. She was more than just T. Grizzly's aunt. She was his manager, his protector, and one of the people who stood by him from the moment his rap career took off. At 41, she played a major role behind the scenes, helping him transition from street struggles to mainstream success after songs like First Day Out and From the D to the A blew up. She was family and business rolled into one, someone T trusted completely.
So she was the one that believed in you. She took her money and put it into your career. And
She quit her job to start managing me.
On August 20th, 2019, T and JB were on Detroit's east side, parked on a 3600 block of 3 Mile Drive while T ran up to a cousin's house. While JB was sitting in the back of his black Chrysler 300, T waited for the door to be answered when he suddenly heard gunshots erupt behind him. At first, he didn't even realize the shots were meant for his vehicle. What he didn't know was that gunmen had walked right up to the car, opened the door, and started firing. JB was hit multiple times. 8 bullets struck her left side as she sat in the back seat. The driver tried to flee and eventually met up with police, but JB was rushed to the hospital where she was pronounced dead. T later revealed he believed the shooters were targeting him, not his aunt, and that tragedy has haunted him ever since.
Tell me what happened. So basically what happened, they walked up to my door and opened my door. You know what I'm saying? Some niggas opened my door, trying to get at me. End up hitting her up.
Detroit police ruled the case a homicide but never confirmed a motive. As of the latest public updates, no arrests or charges have been reported, and the investigation remains open. JB's death became another reminder of how dangerous success can be when the streets still have your name in their sights. Terrell Davis. He was the younger brother of Shea 21 Savage Abraham Joseph, and even though he didn't have his brother's fame, he was trying to make a name for himself in music under the name TM One Way. In 2020, he was in London, where he and Savage had family ties, at a time when knife violence in the city was at an all-time high, especially in areas like Brixton and Lambeth. On the evening of November 22, 2020, Terrell was in Brixton Hill near Romilly's Close, a tough housing estate, when CCTV cameras caught what would become his final moments. The footage showed Terrell walking up to 22-year-old Tyrese Fuller and greeting him with a hug. Seconds later, something shifted. An argument broke out, both men pulled knives, and another man jumped in to break things up. It looked like the situation cooled down. They both put their knives away and started walking off in opposite directions. But just before 6 p.m., the CCTV captured Fuller turning back, pulling out a 6-inch knife, and stabbing Terrell once in the chest before running off. Police and paramedics arrived within minutes, but the wound was too severe. Terrell was pronounced dead at 6:39 p.m. Fuller was quickly identified and arrested. He told the court he owed Terrell £800 in gambling debt and claimed he acted out of fear, but the CCTV told a different story. After a week and a half trial, he was convicted of manslaughter, not murder, and sentenced to 10 years in prison, plus 3 years for the weapon, served concurrently. Zion Brown. He was the young cousin of Julio Fulio, one of the central figures in Jacksonville's KTA movement. In 2017, Zion was only 18, living in a city where the ATK versus KTA feud shaped everyday life. One early morning in May 2017, Zion was at a house on North Rawhide Trail on Jacksonville's west side, spending time with a group of younger relatives. Inside the home were kids as young as 6 and 9. Around 1:30 a.m., that calm ended when someone hurled a brick through the sliding glass door, shattering it and sending panic through the house. A terrified 16-year-old grabbed a phone and called 911, but help didn't come fast enough. Before officers could arrive, 19-year-old DeAndre Jaquez Thomas stepped through the broken glass, walked into the kitchen, then into the living room, and opened fire. Zion, the oldest person in the room, was shot and killed. In the chaos, a 9-year-old and a 15-year-old were also hit by bullets but survived.
The teenager tells News 4 Jax that her family was woken up about 1:30 in the morning Saturday when a brick came crashing through a sliding glass door in the back of their house.
18-year-old Zion Brown was the only adult in the home along with two teens. Today, police said DeAndre Thomas was the shooter. They charged him with murder.
Police identified Thomas and arrested him soon after. His name was already tied to the ATK side of Jacksonville's feud. Zion's murder didn't just break Fulio. It lit the fuse for one of the deadliest back and forths in Florida history. The violence spiraled for years, taking more lives from both sides. By 2024, the feud circled back once again when Fulio himself was shot and killed on his 26th birthday.
Why does it feel like nobody really gives us the inside scoop? Join us on The Powers That Be, the podcast where insiders from Puck break down who has influence, how they use it, and what it actually means for you. New episodes every weekday. Listen to The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.